Hello and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon. Today we continue our medical article, Eye Solutions. Back in the studio, I have Campbell and Stephanie. Welcome, panelists, back to the studio.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
And Campbell, we talked about a shot in the eye yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
What's that about?
Well, we have been discussing color blindness, and color blindness, again, is just the inability to distinguish between different colors. And this shot in the eye was something that was discovered by a couple, Jay and Maureen Knights. They are a husband and wife scientist team that work as professors at the University of Washington, and they discovered a shot that can deliver some proteins into the eye that will help people with color blindness to be able to see color.
All right, and they have teamed up with Avalanche Biotechnologies in California. And so they're not doing this alone. They are working with this biotech firm there in California. And they say that this will work. That's what Maureen Knights says. She said, "I don't think there's any question that it will work. We learned that yesterday." So she's quite confident that they have found a solution for color blindness, which is great news for those who suffer from it. And Stephanie, could you share something from yesterday that really stuck out for you?
Well, as I mentioned yesterday, I have a family member, an uncle who has it. And here we had the statistics that 12 men, 1 in 12, and 1 in 12 men have it, and 1 in 230 women have it. So as I can see in my family, the men have a higher chance of having it than the women.
That's right. We learned yesterday that's because of genetics. And of course, females have two X chromosomes, and males have only one, and the mutation is there on the X chromosome. So that's why men are more likely to suffer from it, because women, they have two X chromosomes, so if one is affected, there's a better chance that the second one will not be affected, and they will not suffer from color blindness. And so men are definitely more likely to have it. Up to 8% of the world's male population actually suffers from color blindness, according to colorblindness.com. And those are some of the things that we learned yesterday, and we're continuing our discussion today about color blindness, and we're going to learn a lot more. So if you have your magazines, please open them to page 37, and we'll have our first reading for today.
Most people think of color blindness as an inconvenience or mild disability, mainly causing problems with unmatched shirts and socks. But the Knightses say the condition can have profound impacts, limiting choices for education or careers, making driving dangerous, and forcing continual adaptation to a world geared for color vision. People may not qualify as commercial pilots if they're colorblind. Other careers that can be limited include those of chefs, decorators, electricians, and house painters, all of which require detailed color vision. For 10 years, we have been trying to figure out a way to get the genes to go to the back of the eye with a simple shot, said Jay Knights. Now, with the help of Avalanche, the researchers say they've developed a technique that does just that. It uses a safe vector to house the pigment gene, which is injected directly into the jelly-like center of the eye. There, it targets cells on the back of the retina, said Thomas W. Chalberg, Jr., the co-founder and chief executive of the firm.
Okay, I like the way this starts off today. We talk about color blindness, and most people think of it as simply an inconvenience or maybe a mild disability. You can't, maybe you don't match your clothes, and that's, I believe I had a teacher in high school who had that problem. Maybe sometimes he couldn't match his clothes and so forth, or you wear two different color socks.
Right.
Right? And, but it can be much more serious than that. And we do get a list here, though, of some of the problems that it that could cause, as I mentioned, you know, clothes, shirts, socks, and so forth. But what about, what do the Nietzsches say about this condition?
Well, they say that the condition can have profound impacts, limiting choices for education or careers, making driving dangerous, and forcing continual adaptation to a world geared for color vision. Basically, this paragraph is answering, well, what's the big deal? You know, so a lot of people think, well, it's not a big deal. They just can't see certain colors. But the fact that they're spending money and they're spending time doing this research means that colorblindness does have a serious impact on people's lives. So they're trying to explain why.
That's right. As it mentions there, it can limit your choices for careers, and that is a big impact on your life. That's much more serious than wearing, you know, two different colored socks, Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can find a cure for this, then people could potentially have a different career.
Right.
And so that is a profound impact. That's a big impact. It could, could change things. And of course, here they're talking about the condition has a profound impact and that it limits you, but the solution could also have a profound impact and that it brings a cure.
Yes.
We do see some words here that we want to discuss. The first one is adaptation. We've talked about adapting. Stephanie, you mentioned yesterday about how your uncle had to adapt. What does this word mean again?
Adaptation means the process of changing to suit different conditions. So how my uncle adapt with his red and green color blindness is to memorize where the colors are with the stoplights, where the red light is and where the green light is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they discuss a world geared for color vision. And we don't really think about how our world really is geared for color vision, how color really does play a big role in a lot of things. You know, for example, just the street lights. There's no sound that tells you go or stop. It's based on color, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you watch sports, a lot of the distinguishing between the two teams is based on color, you know, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of examples like that where things are based on color, and we don't often think about that.
That's right. We don't. We take it for granted. And so they have to adapt and they have mm-hmm. to, get used to that. But people may not qualify as commercial pilots. So we mentioned just a few moments ago that this has a profound impact. It limits your choices for careers. And here's an example of that. Some people, they cannot be commercial pilots. They can't fly for big airline companies because they are colorblind, and that word qualify just simply means what?
Well, that they don't have the skills or abilities that they need in order to do a job. They're not good enough for the job.
Okay, and so also we see there are other careers that can be affected. All right, so if you're a chef or a decorator, electrician, a house painter, so forth, if you're colorblind, you would have problems in these fields. Now, the one that sticks out to me is a chef.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think of, you know, someone being a chef, if you're colorblind, what problems could that cause?
Well, just the idea of different spices come in different colors, mm-hmm. and sometimes you can basically on your sight, you know, your color, you can tell what is, you know, maybe paprika versus what is pepper.
So it'd slow you down if you have to sit there and read everything.
Right, and or I mean, you might accidentally put something wrong inside the dish and make it completely unedible.
You know, one time I was making pumpkin bread and it called for sugar and I put salt instead and it was nasty.
Yes.
But it had nothing to do with me being colorblind.
And but so, see, that's a clear example though, because salt and sugar are both white.
Yeah.
And so you can't tell the difference. So if you think about that on a grander scale, you might end up making something really spicy that was meant to be sweet.
All right, that's a good point.
Well, on the other hand, in restaurants, chefs have to make the dishes very fancy and really decorative.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe because of that as well.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
might put in the wrong colors and make the dish look really weird.
Yes. That's right. And speaking of decorating things, decorators, of course, that makes sense. You're decorating a home and you could have some weird colors. Although sometimes that seems to be the end thing. Anyway.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And electricians, you know, it took me a second to think about electricians, but again, the whole idea of our world is geared for color vision. Electricians, a lot of wires are based on colors, mm-hmm. right? So you connect certain things to certain places based on the color of the wire.
And that's scary. Yeah.
It can be very dangerous if you connect the wrong wire.
Oops.
Or maybe, you know, you see those movies where someone's trying to defuse a bomb.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Cut
too.
The red wire.
Yeah. Oh, no. Hopefully they're not colorblind. Okay. Well, and of course, if you're painting a house, you want to make sure you get the colors right. But if you make a mistake there, it's not the end of the world.
Well, actually, one that is not mentioned that I kind of thought of is also fashion, right? If you're a fashion designer, you have to also work with different colors.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a lot of things affected here, and if you're not colorblind, you never think of it. And maybe a lot of you listeners are thinking, I'm not colorblind, I don't really know anyone who is colorblind, but it's good to learn about this and mm-hmm. know what other people are going through. And so we see that it really limits them, and it can be quite serious when it comes to their professions. All right, as we move on, we hear from Jay Knights, and he says, for 10 years, we have been trying to figure out a way to get the genes to go to the back of the eye with a simple shot. So, Campbell, they haven't been doing this only for a couple of months or so, or a couple of years. They've been doing it for a while.
Well, yeah, they've been doing it for a decade, for 10 years, and they've been trying to figure out a way to get the genes to the back of the eye, because that is where all the colors, color sensors are in your eye.
All right, and we get more information about that right here in the next paragraph. It says, now with the help of Avalanche, and this is the biotech company, the biotech firm that they are working with their help, the researchers say they've developed a technique that does just that. Okay, so they're able to get what's needed to the back of the eye via a shot. Now, it says next, it uses a safe vector to house the pigment gene. Let's take a look at that word vector, Stephanie.
Well, a vector is an agent that is used to transfer genetic material from one cell to another.
Okay, and that vector is what actually houses the pigment. Okay, so if you house something, that's where it is kept. That's mm-hmm. where you put something.
Mm-hmm.
And then that word pigment, it's a substance that gives something a particular color when it is present in it, or is added to it. And so we see that word a lot when we're talking about color, Campbell.
That's right. When you talk about pigment of paint, you know, this is what gives the paint the color. So we're talking about a gene that allows people to see color. So you're not injecting pigment into the eye. You're just injecting a pigment gene, so a gene that allows you to see color.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is all injected, and it's injected directly into the jelly-like center of the eye, and that just sounds kind of painful.
Yeah, I shuddered when I read that. I was just, oh.
Yeah, it, you know, you think of going through that jelly-like center, it sounds very soft, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like it would be very painful. But there, it targets cells on the back of the retina. And this is according to Thomas Chalberg Jr., Thomas W. Chalberg Jr., and he is the co-founder and chief executive of the biotech firm Avalanche. And so we get more of the details here of how this is all working. We've been talking about, you know, the need for it and that they come up with the solution, but we get more of the specifics here. And we have more to learn about it. What happens once it all gets there into your eye? Let's find out about that in our next reading.
Once there, the DNA gets to set up shop and produce the photopigment of interest, he said. It takes only 30% of the cells to be changed, to put the world in a whole new hue, Jay Knight said. Early tests show the technique meets that mark in monkeys. It would cure, or at least help people who are colorblind, said Dr. Rohit Varma, a professor of ophthalmology and director of the Eye Institute at the University of Southern California. While noting that many tests that succeeded in animals have later failed in humans, he said he's cautiously optimistic that the trials will deliver as promised. Plus, he said, it will be important to learn whether the therapy not only adds the color sensing ability, but actually improves the lives of those who are treated.
All right, Thomas Chalberg Jr. continues here. He says, once there, the DNA gets to set up shop and produce the photopigment. So we've been talking about this safe vector that houses the pigment gene. It's injected into the eye, and once it's there, it sets up shop. Now, if something sets up shop, it begins to work, right, Campbell?
That's right. When we talk about someone setting up shop, in the literal sense, it means that they are maybe opening a store, they're getting things ready to operate in a business, and so the idea here is the DNA is finding a place inside the eye, and it's starting to work. It's starting to get to, you know, to create the photopigment.
Okay, it sets up shop and produces the photopigment of interest meaning whatever is needed. You know, we talked mm-hmm. about there's red-green color blindness and blue-yellow color blindness, and so they base it on what each individual needs, and it begins to work there in the eye. And we learn more about how much of the cells is needed, right? The percentage here.
Yeah, and only 30% of the cells to be changed to put the world in a whole new hue.
All right, so not everything needs to be changed there according to the cells. It only takes 30% of them to be changed and for people to be able to see the colors that they need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is according to the scientist Jay Knights. Early tests show the technique meets that mark in monkeys. And so they've been testing it on monkeys, and yesterday we learned that they hope to test this in humans within the next 2 years. And so this is a normal procedure. Oftentimes we think of mice where things are tested. Here they use monkeys. And we see the phrase here, meets that mark. What does that mean, Campbell?
It means that it hits the target. It's exactly what they're looking for. So basically, in monkeys, they're able to change 30% of the cells to help the monkeys to see. But I'm curious how they know that the monkeys are colorblind.
Mm.
Like, do they cause the monkeys? How did they find these monkeys?
Maybe they use these tests that we see there on page 37.
Maybe.
And, you know, these tests, they're a bunch of dots, different colors, right? And so you mm-hmm. have to distinguish between the different colors. And here, the one on page 37, we see an image there, but, you know, if you can't see the right colors, you won't be able to distinguish the image, right?
Yeah, yes, exactly. I remember taking these tests as an elementary school student back in New York. They would test for color blindness and deafness, and so we'd have to look at these pictures often, and basically to a person who is colorblind, they're not going to be able to distinguish the photos within the dots because it's based on color. But still, do they just test a bunch of monkeys and find the ones that are colorblind and then do this other test on them?
It'd
be interesting to figure out the process.
Yeah, how does the monkey communicate to them?
Yeah,
whether or not
exactly.
Well, you can train monkeys, I think. They train the monkeys first to probably show signs and stuff and have the monkeys tell them what it is.
That's a good point, yeah.
And then later do mm-hmm. with color and see if the monkeys can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Still tell them what it is.
That's right. Maybe that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why they use monkeys instead of mice.
Maybe.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as we continue on, we hear from a professor at the Eye Institute at the University of Southern California, Dr. Varma, who actually is not involved in the research, but he is commenting on it. And what does he say, Campbell?
Well, he says it would cure or at least help people who are colorblind, which is true. You know, again, we're talking about a treatment, so it's not necessarily a cure yet. There still needs to be more tests done. So that's why he says it's a cure or at least a help. So basically, it's a cure or a treatment.
All right. So many tests are conducted on animals. We know that. And as we move on to the last paragraph, it talks about, you know, many tests that succeed in animals later fail in humans. That's why I mentioned, I believe, yesterday that testing it in humans is a key point of all of this, and they have to see if it will work. And we also see that the Knights, the scientists, they are quite confident that it will work, but we still will have to wait and see. And so as we look at this here at the end of day two, we see that some people are very optimistic. And here, this Dr. Varma is cautiously optimistic, Kimball.
That's right. So when he's optimistic, he's very positive about it. He's pretty sure it will work. But he's also cautious to not make it bigger than it is and just say, yes, this is going to work for sure. But he is very optimistic about it.
So he believes the trials will deliver as promised. If something delivers, that means it will do what it says it will do.
Mm-hmm.
And so he believes it will, but he has some caution there because, you know, it hasn't been tested in humans, so you need to be a bit cautious. What else did he say, Stephanie?
He said it will be important to learn whether the therapy not only adds the color sensing ability, but also actually improves the lives of those who are treated.
Okay, so that's a key point, the quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get that from this. You want the people who are suffering from color blindness to have a better quality of life after receiving this injection in their eyes.
Yeah, and also, as we mentioned before, they couldn't get the jobs they wanted, and so maybe then they can. They can be a pilot or a chef, a decorator, right, and such.
So that's the best case scenario, but mm-hmm. even if it just helps them some, it could be worth it.
For sure, and I just thinking again back on the idea of LASIK surgery, you know, when it first came out, I'm sure there had to be a lot of clinical trials and tests, and then the next step was to see, well, does this really help people? And for me, it does. I mean, it's helped me a lot, just not having to deal with contacts and glasses, and it's been a big blessing for me. So I think the key here is, you know, once we figure out whether it works, then they need to see, okay, does it help?
That's right. All right. Well, as we look at the bottom of page 37, we have a couple of sidebars. The first one there, it says seeking approval. And it says after preclinical trials are complete, Talberg said, he hopes to move to human trials within 1 to 2 years and then seek Federal Food and Drug Administration approval for the treatment. Eventually, the treatment could be offered during a single visit to an ophthalmologist's office. Such a development would be an amazing advantage, said Dr. Varma, who is not involved in the research. So we're talking about two different people here again. Thomas Chalberg is with the biotech company that is working with the two scientists. And so they do need to do more tests, as we know, with the humans. And then they need to seek federal approval with the Food and Drug Administration, Campbell.
That's right. The Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, is a government organization that tests for the safety and efficacy of different foods and drugs that people want to bring to the market and sell to people.
And it says here you could go to the doctor just once, a single treatment. And that's interesting to know because you don't want to keep getting that mm-hmm. shot in your eye. What if it's like you have to go, you know, once every 6 months to get that? But it says here the treatment could be offered during a single visit to the doctor's office. And so that's good to know. It's fairly convenient. You only have to go through that once, hopefully.
Yes, that's right.
All right, and then we have a definite interest. Could you read that for us, Campbell?
Sure. It says, more than 10,000 people have visited a new website associated with the project, www.colorvisionawareness.com, including many who hope to be the first cured of the condition. I definitely would be interested, said David Curry, 33, of Port Townsend, Washington, who had to abandon a dream of becoming a commercial helicopter pilot because of his deuteranopia, or red-green color blindness. I'd want to speak to Professor Knights more and learn about the process more before putting my eyes on the chopping block, so to speak. But I've always wondered what it would look like to see color like everyone else. For their part, the Knightses say they're eager to see a lifetime of work put into clinical practice. The technique to correct color blindness also might eventually be used for other cone-based disorders, including retinitis pigmentosa, an inherited disorder that can lead to blindness. Curing color blindness, though, could affect millions who would like to know what they're missing, the scientists said.
All right. Thank you, Campbell. So I encourage you listeners to check out this website, first of all, colorvisionawareness.com. And you can find out a lot more information concerning this issue. And then we hear from a person who is colorblind, and they are interested. His name is David Curry. He's interested in pursuing this, but he wants to find out more information, of course, which makes sense. But he also uses a phrase here that I want to talk about. He wants to get more information about the process before putting his eyes on the chopping block. And what is meant by that phrase, Stephanie?
Well, it's pretty much like risking his eyes, because if the surgery, the cure doesn't work, then he might go blind or something worse, or something else can happen.
Yeah, you think of a chopping block, I think of, you know, maybe meat or something that's put there, and it's going to, you know, that would cause a lot of pain to you when you use that phrase. And that's what he's talking about. It's a big risk maybe involved. So he wants to find out more information before he's willing to go through with the procedure, basically.
That makes sense. I mean, you don't want to go in with color blindness, which, as we were saying earlier, is a mild disability, and then end up going completely blind because someone's stabbing you in the eye with a needle. So it is good to do your research and to find out more information.
Well, the Knight says they are eager to see a lifetime of work put into clinical practice, and so they have a vested interest in this. And when you talk about something, you know, as a lifetime of work, you really want to see that come about. And so they are excited to see it work. And I'm sure that they are putting everything they have into this to make sure it does work. We'll have to wait and see if it actually does. Well, we have come to the end of day two of our medical article, but we have one more day, and we're switching gears a bit. We're still talking about eyes and eye solutions, but not so much about color blindness. Come back tomorrow to learn more about that. Until then, this is Brandon.
Campbell.
Stephanie.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.